This is Tim Henney.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peake. Join us for The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. after NPR News.
Brought to you by the doctors at the Park City Specialty Clinic,
Grand Valley Bank and Heber Valley Bank, and Park Meadows Country Club.
And we're back to the Sundance Weekend with David Darcy and a guest, I'm very pleased to have a guest this morning, one of the more significant names in film for, what, about 40, 50 years, Werner?
Somehow, I am. Well-seasoned.
Mr. Werner Herzog, and was the last time you were here at Sundance, was it Grizzly Man?
It was Grizzly Man, yes.
Yes.
And I still have the unfulfilled dream to test the Olympic ramp just at the entrance to Park City. But it has to be prepared, and I need to have these very large skis. And I want to take off.
You know, one of your films that I like most is, now I'm sure I'm getting the title wrong, is it The Great Anguish of the Skiflieger, the Skiflyer, Steiner? What's the title?
The correct title doesn't matter. It's The Great Ecstasy of the Sculptor Steiner.
Oh, the woodcutter Steiner,
about a world champion ski flyer. And I did this film because it was my dream as an adolescent to become world champion in ski flying. So I was in training and I was fairly good. But an accident of my very best friend at that time stopped it from 1 second to the next. So that was the end of it.
Well, the topics you're interested in seem to sort of go all over the map. And for this one, you were looking at the internet as, lo and behold, reveries of the connected world. That was able to see the film on my computer, which is another sign of the connected world.
Yes.
What drew you into looking at the net in the first place to get your arms around this huge topic?
Well, the strange fact is that I barely use the internet. I do not have a cell phone. I do not like it for cultural reasons. I like to sit face to face with you, for example, and have a conversation. I use internet myself only for emails, sometimes Google Maps, and sometimes to check the weather in Park City, whether I need a parka or not. So that's about it. And I was drawn into it by a company that has done a film with me before about texting and driving, which was sponsored by AT&T, a public service announcement film. It's called From 1 Second to the Next, about catastrophic accidents that happened by people who were texting while they were driving. And it had a huge impact on the internet. It was on YouTube and millions of people saw it. And now there was the idea to create a couple of short clips for YouTube on the internet, various aspects. And on the second day of shooting, it became clear to me that this was the wrong format. It had to be a long film, a feature-length documentary, because the tapestry of what is going on the internet is kind of amazing, and it's still unfinished business. I'd like to add more films to the one that I've done right now. But I ended up with a film that was completely different from what was the original idea.
Talk about that. What was... differentiate the film from the idea, if you could.
Well, when you are into doing, when you are into doing 5 minute or 6 minute films for YouTube, of course you are in a different ball game. It's a different rules, different sort of approach, and of course here, the connection between various of the persons that you see on camera makes a lot of difference. And how can I say? I just followed my curiosity And this enormous curiosity leads me into things, seeing the contours, I think, sharper than people who are very much into it. You are sitting with a man who has made his first phone call at age 17. You have to imagine that. You see, I grew up in the mountains in a very remote area of Bavaria. We had no running water. We had to go to the well with our bucket and bring in fetch water. We barely had electricity. We had no toilet, I mean an outhouse outside. And, of course, no radio, no television didn't exist at that time, no telephone. And I made my first phone call literally at the age of 17. So now a man like that does something of the connected world. And I think I'm the right one because I'm kind of uncontaminated.
Why have you, by your own admission, you've resisted total immersion in the Internet? Why the resistance?
Because I want to immerse myself with human beings, not through an abstract web that's out there. I like to have you at my dinner table. It holds six persons, meaning my wife and me. We cook, and we have maximum four friends. And this is my social network, and that's how I function.
There were people in your film that... some of them come across an odd mix of personable, but a little creepy. Like the guy talking about the cars that drive themselves, and if they make a mistake, they will learn from it, and they will pass the lesson on to other cars, and educate them not to do.
Unborn ones, yes.
But what you've shown is that there is that in this immersion in science. Personality is still a highly determining factor in all of this, especially
right.
among the people you're talking to. And there is a kind of visionary or belief dimension to a lot of this as well.
It is true, but it's not unjustified because it is something that science fiction has not foreseen. When you look at science fiction literature, let's say 50s, there were flying cars and colonies in outer space and all this. And literally, by the year 2000, and NASA made films, and I quote a film, NASA foresaw a gigantic rotating system before the year 2000, where ore mined from the moon would provide the building materials. It's all, you see, that was on the radar of everyone. But the Internet, nobody foresaw. Even the pioneers who sent out the very first message from computer to computer did not realize the magnitude of what they were doing. Only 15, 20 years later, the room and the router from which and the server from which this first message was sent was converted into some sort of a shrine. But it took 15, 20 years until the pioneers realized what they had created.
And explain a little bit about the story of Nelson, the first guy you were talking about, and sort of his, he sort of went off down an avenue nobody else accepted, and you had to assure him that you don't think he's insane. I'm not quite sure what that story is about.
Well, you have to dig much deeper into his basic ideas, but it was a different methodology to, for example, verify texts and paste texts and connect it with similar texts and so completely different sort of route. And it doesn't function like this today in the Internet. You have Google and you type in certain terms and you get some answers and some results. And, of course, for hanging on for so long to his idea, he was considered kind of insane, and he admits it that people think he's kind of maybe insane, but he says for giving it up would be even worse. I have to stick to my idea, which is a good idea. And I said to him, you know what, to us you look like the only one out there who is clinically sane. And he really enjoyed that moment. Yeah, yeah. So it's a very private moment. As I do not do interviews, I'm not a journalist. Mm. I have conversations, and some of this charm of a conversation comes across.
Yeah. I was reminded in an episode that showed your discretion. It was the episode of the family that was victimized when the daughter maimed in an accident, and the image, the graphic images were spewed out on the internet, and you declined.
Millions of people saw it. Voyeurs saw it,
and you declined to show even an archive picture of the daughter. It reminded me of your Grizzly Man, where you did not. You listened to the last moments of Tim Treadwell's attack by the grizzly bear, but you chose not to air any of that at all.
Sure, there's a borderline, and you have to understand it as a filmmaker. Each one of us is in this profession has to somehow formulate their own borderlines, but for me they are clear.
There are a couple developments that are happening that might be of concern. Just over on Main Street, there are these presentations of new developments in virtual reality. And what the effect is, each individual consumer wears a head, goggles.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, it looks a bit like Guantanamo, frankly, like Guantanamo prisoners. But what it is individualizing this to the exclusion of anyone else, it seems, in the consumer experience. But the other thing is that there seems to be a corporatization of the internet and a real concentration, almost like the oil companies were, that you have some of these being the largest corporations in the world. In fact, Google is now surpassing Apple. You see a danger in that also.
Of course, but it shouldn't make us too nervous. If you have a clear system of values and if you create your own filter, you would be doing all right. The same thing with virtual reality. You create your own filters and you will be all right.
Lo and Behold has its first screening here at the festival at the Mark tonight. And from there you go to the tomorrow to the Temple Theater at 9 a.m. and down in Salt Lake City at the Library Theater at 9 p.m. That's on Monday. Then you're back this Saturday, Holiday Village Cinema at 9:15 p.m. And we're very proud to have that we had the chance to have you in the studio, Mr. Herzog.
Thank
and
you for
just to show
me.
You, I have a little dinky cell phone. I think that there are 20 messages piled up. I don't know how to erase them. So
yes,
I am with you.
Them.
I am with you.
There's solidarity
waste,
here.
Yeah, yeah. Right. If there are more than five, delete them categorically. But learn how to do that.
Thanks, Werner.
Thank you very much.